the release of the album Doi with five original works by Lei Liang, and we find five very thought-provoking gems that present us with a musical face-off of sorts, and more on that in just a moment. First, let me pass along a warm welcome from WGTE and Lei Liang. It's such a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
You've managed to capture the spirit of this portrait album very succinctly with the title, and I think that therein lies a great launching point for us. What does that mean, and how does it apply to this collection of works?
Yeah, the Chinese word "dui," of course, it can be interpreted in different ways, but in this particular context, it's really about facing off. I think of it as almost like a reflection on my relationship with many of my amazing collaborators. Many of them are world-class musicians. And sometimes I create a situation, let's say in the case of a duo, you have two amazing performers facing off each other. And that's, for me, kind of an interesting thing to incorporate into the composition. Like the first piece is for the amazing pipa master Wu Man and my great colleague and dear friend, percussionist Stephen Schick. And you know, each one is an amazing soloist, and they can command the attention, coming up with the energy to really inspire the audience as a soloist. But when you put them together on the stage, it's kind of almost interesting to see a solo string instrument facing a battery of percussion that kind of cover half of the stage. It's in itself, it's just, the visually it's interesting. And that, of course, became part of my consideration for the piece.
So we have instruments facing off. We have musicians and musical heroes facing off. And are there pieces where you are also facing, I guess, aspects of your musical journey or personal spirituality?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, that if we think about this as a way to explore the idea of this, sometimes is a set up confrontation between virtuosos, and but also the ultimate facing off is about confronting and maybe reflecting on our own past, you know, where I came from and why I'm doing what I'm doing now, what happened to my own heritage, to the place where I came from, right? So there is a very tender piece in this album. It's a suite called Mongolian Suite. It's for cello solo. So again, this is a great player, Maya Beiser, interpreting this piece. And it's a piece that is really kind of for myself, in a way, to think about what has inspired me. Years ago, when I was still a child, I was growing up in Beijing, and this is the last years of the Cultural Revolution. So the airwaves was, you know, full of cheerful propaganda music. And it was in that context that I first encountered, through my great teacher, a leading Mongolian scholar, Wu Lanji, who went on to become the chief editor of the Mongolian Encyclopedia. Anyways, he learned these songs from his mother, from his teacher. They're all giants from that part of the tradition. And I listen to these songs, they're so lonely and they're so full of nostalgia. And they also focus on subjects that I don't find in other music, such as courage or long journeys in one's life, friendship, you know, things like that. It's almost transcendental when I was growing up in Beijing. So these songs became a really important part of my life, especially after I left China. I think this is probably a experience that many of us have, which is that the rich repertoire in that tradition about missing one's home. You know, the Mongolians were once busy conquering the world, but as a result, they're always away from home and they're always missing their home. And I think this is something that we probably can resonate deeply because I think we are all living away from home, however you define that. And so music has this amazing way to connect us with our identity and where we came from. It became this way of, a powerful way to discover who we are as part of a community or part of a cultural heritage or spiritual culture heritage. Something that we can't take it for granted. You really have to cultivate and earn it. So I'm not Mongolian, but Mongolian music has become so important to me. For me, they're as beautiful as the Gregorian chant. So they're sort of like the foundation of many things that I do musically. So I'm just so happy I returned to my root in a way through this set of pieces. There are six of them in this suite, six small movements. And Maya, of course, played them so beautifully. My dream is to write more cello suites, kind of following Bach's footstep. I'll have many years to complete the next, hopefully, five more so that I can also have six cello suites. But it's just meaningful for me to do a project like that.
And so these songs in the Mongolian suite, they originally had a text to them and were replacing the voice part with the cello, like a emulating the human voice with the, through the cello.
Some of them do, some of them are my how do you say, kind of a virtual folk song or a virtual dance music. It's something that I create. So it's a mixture of songs that really have original forms in the traditional Mongolian repertoire. Yes, that will come with lyrics. A lot of them is about mother and homeland, but there are also ones, in particular the fifth movement, which is the dance movement. That is my take on the dance tradition. Which is kind of unusual because Mongolians is not really known for their dance music, but when you think about how important music is for their lives, and the elegance that you can sense from their musical expressions, either vocal or instrumental music, it's actually not that hard to imagine how elegant their dance can be. Maybe when they're a little drunk, the dance is not quite, I in the piece, I try to throw them off a little bit to show that they can be just as free as they want to be, not tied to a 4-4 beat or whatever. Have fun, yeah.
Well, since we're talking about this idea of connecting with your journey, I think the Lakescape Five is a great piece to touch on next. If you want to tell us a little bit about the series and some of the imagery that inspired it.
Oh yeah, that was actually it came from my experience at a Buddhist monastery. I was once learning meditation in a monastery in upstate New York. That was early spring. I drove up there seeking enlightenment, but my conversation with the monks there was utterly boring. So I just decided to take walks by myself around the lake. There was a beautiful lake in the middle of this monastery. And I remember catching sight of this huge V shape. Kind of something was floating on the surface of the water. And it took me a while to realize what it was. Under the moonlight, there was a beaver taking a swim. And this image stayed with me. After leaving the monastery, I kept thinking, what was it about that image that was so important for me, that as if it was revealing something to myself that I really need to think about deeply? Then I came to the realization that that's actually my relationship with sound. When you think about the water, that's silence. And when the beaver was moving on it, it's bending the waves, is kind of creating a shape. That is sort of like how music is made, making a disturbance in the airwaves. And then we can kind of sense there's anything we can put into it, but that is written over silence. So because of that realization, I wrote a series of works. Originally, there was pieces that are called lake for different instrumentation. Then I developed them into a series for larger ensembles, including this one, Lakescape 5, which is for the wonderful low band ensemble. It's a very strange, very strange combination of forces, voice and trumpet, bass clarinet and trombone. I don't think there's anything like that combination. It was so much fun writing for them.
And what was the origin of the text that the Load Bang Ensemble performed?
There is one word that was emphasized in this piece is the word fei, which means fly or take off. This is from a poem by a dear friend of mine, a great bilingual poet and a great literary scholar, Professor Wai-Yin Lit. He already retired from UCSD, but Wai-Yin, if he and I used to hang out in a cafe and we would have these endless conversations about Chinese paintings and poetry. And I love his provocative images in his poetry. And this is one of those pieces I try to respond to a dear friend's artistic creation. And then what I did was using the ensemble, and you can almost think of it as like making particles out of his poetry. It's the sound of the poetry. So all four musicians have to speak during their performance and then create a kind of a, I describe it as kind of a cloud of sonic particles flying around. And that was my way of responding to this dear friend's amazing poetry and try to make it, I always call it to animate the poetry, to animate it through sound and space.
So fascinating. I feel like this whole piece is just evidence that you never know where you might stumble upon inspiration. I mean, perhaps you were hoping to be moved by your conversation with the monk, but instead found it at the lakeside. Can I ask what prompted you to drive up to the monastery in the first place?
Oh, I have always been fascinated with Buddhism. And I think during the kind of a period of self-discovery, I noticed that the analytical depth in Buddhism really helped me a great deal. So I took some lessons in Boston, joined some meditation classes, but I just decided during spring break that year, I think it was the late 1990s, I decided to really go to a monastery to see whether that is the place for me to get a sense of belonging, and the result is totally the opposite. But I think that was a good lesson. You got to take these lessons from everywhere you go to, and if you keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, you would discover answers that might not need to come from a monk or something. I think I took a master class from the beaver.
Let's mention as well the piece Luminosity. It seems like in Luminosity, you had some fun pushing the envelope with some special techniques. And I was very curious about this threading technique that's going on.
This is written for my dear friend and colleague, Mark Dresser, who is really, in my opinion, the greatest bass player. But not, he's really not just a double bass player. He reinvented this instrument basically through his incredible creativity. He probably made 10 different double basses out of this instrument. But this is really important for all of us to remember. I mean, every instrument is made by us. By our long history of music, we invented the piano, we changed the piano, and there's no old instrument. There's only old way of using the instrument. Mark Dresser is one of those who was always on the forefront of reinventing something new out of the old. So just seeing him making music, creating sound, for example, this thing, your particular technique that you referenced, the threading technique, basically you have to detach the hair from the bow and then reattach the hair from beneath the strings and thread it between the strings and then back onto the bow. This way, when you bow the instrument, You can make a choir of bass, like not only touching one note at a time, you can basically make the instrument sing like in four parts if you want. So basically it becomes a four instrument playing all at once with great force because the strings have such friction and contact with the string. So the bow hair and the string. So it's an amazing and it's incredibly powerful way to use the instrument. And that's only one of the many things that Mark brought to this instrument. So yeah, Luminosity is not just a double bass piece, it's really a Mark Dresser piece. It's a piece written for this amazing inventor on the instrument.
And just to circle back to, well, where we began, because you'd mentioned vis-a-vis for pipa and percussion, and I've been dying to ask about this analogy. You described it as being like X-ray vision. And how does X-ray vision translate to music for you?
This is actually a phrase I tend to tell my students that to be a really good composer, you almost have to develop X-ray vision because you can't just hear things with its, on its surface value. You really have to kind of penetrate that. Our training or our sensitivity and also our drive to invent, really have to come from a way for us to perceive things from different angles, for example. I can cite one example. I hope it makes sense to you and your listeners. So the opening of one of the greatest, most iconic pipa pieces called "Ambush from All Side," and I've been listening to this piece since I was a child. But there's something about it always make me wonder what make this piece so amazing. Just the opening, all you hear is just amazing strumming on the strings. It's super powerful. But there's something more than that. You can make a loud sound, but it doesn't have that kind of dimensionality. So I started to analyze that and using different lenses. This is another metaphor I like to use, that you really have to develop different lenses to look at the same thing. Very much like looking at paintings, you look at it with a telescope, and also you have to apply a microscope so that you can see different things out of the same image. We do the same thing with sound. You use a telescope and a microscope to understand the sound, then you realize there are multiple things going on with this one single gesture. Then it starts to reveal itself why this powerful opening is so magical. So I try to kind of look at things using different lenses so that I see different things underneath of what I hear tend to be like even just one instant, maybe 1 second of sound. But once you start to look at them using different lenses, you realize this second can be just beautiful in itself, but you could also project energy that can go on for a very, very long time. I guess that's not unique. Just think about the opening of J.S. Bach's B minor Mass. You hear that opening chord, whoa, something monumental is coming. You have just experienced maybe 1 second of sound. But maybe there's an hour of sound coming after that because it projects that kind of long-term energy. It's one of those things I'm really interested in with music.
And then the piece Deja Vu, is that a rearrangement of Vis-a-Vis, or is that taking some of those gestures that you're introduced and taking them on another trajectory?
It's both. So it was funny, Jimmy Lind, this wonderful violinist, he was at the time a music director of La Jolla Music Society Summerfest. And he was the one who commissioned the work Vis-a-Vis for Uman and Stephen Schick to premiere at the festival. And when he was in the audience, he listening to the piece, he turned to me, he said, "I want to play that piece. Can you make a piece available to me?" So yes, but it does change quite a bit of, how do you write, rearrange something for the violin that is originally for pipa. They're completely different instruments. So that involved quite a bit of rewriting and introducing new materials, of course. But I'm glad that in the end it worked. For quite some time, I was really quite challenged by that proposal. But I love Jimmy and I wanted to do something for him. So yeah, it was all really worthwhile to put in that effort.
Thank you. And for the benefit of our listeners, we've been chatting on Zoom, and Lei Liang's background is this fascinating icy landscape. And I feel like we need to hear the story, the backstory on that.
Yes. Yeah, well, I love Zoom partly because I can be anywhere in the world as I wish. So I just put on a background. What you're seeing is Arctic, an image from NASA, and I have been working with a oceanographer, a dear colleague and collaborator for the last 7 years now, and we focus on the Arctic, all those beautiful sounds that were unknown to us because Beethoven didn't know whales were singing. Right, so there are a lot of new stuff we can learn. But coming back to that point that I mentioned earlier about Mongolia, that their music in a way was asking us, what is our home? Where is our home? When we miss our home, what has become of it, right? And now, because of these different perspectives we have, for example, me as a composer can work with scientists and explore the Arctic. It's actually part of our home. We now finally can say that listening to the Arctic is listening to our home, our planet as our home. So my exploration to find that connection with our home, starting with Mongolia and Beijing and studying in America, now leading to explorations of the Arctic and the oceans, is really part of the same journey.
That's composer Lei Liang on his portrait album, Dui, which is now available for streaming. Thank you so much, Lei, for taking us up on a conversation, and we wish you the best in your very exciting work there at the intersection of science and music. It's really wonderful.
Thank you.